Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Amazing, amazing, amazing. A correction from yesterday. Oh, my gosh, what a mistake. Yes, yesterday I reported that Pluto, our poor planet Pluto, had been ostracized. Yes, I said Pluto was discovered to be only a moon of Neptune. And it turns out that that's not exactly true. What really had happened is that back on August 24th, 2006, Pluto, always thought the furthest away planet, was officially downgraded to be a dwarf planet. A dwarf planet, whatever that means. A dwarf planet is a celestial body that is in orbit around the sun, has sufficient mass for self-gravity, and does not clear the neighborhood around its orbit, and it's not a satellite, but it's a small thing, you know. But it's still a planet. It's called a dwarf planet. But it's downgraded. Downgraded from an official planet to a dwarf planet. Does that ostracize it? Do people now say, you know, there are eight planets and Pluto? I guess they do. So it brings me to the subject of how must Pluto feel? Does Pluto have any feelings? And I was thinking about things like that, you know, and what it felt like as a kid being a planet. Well, what it's like to be ostracized. Do you ever remember being a kid and not being chosen for a team? Never being chosen from a team? How about not being chosen or not being allowed to play with other kids because of your color, because of your height? How about because of your sex? You're a girl. These are a boy's game. Right? You're a boy. These are things that only girls are allowed to do. I remember one guy who was looking for a poker game, and he played poker. And he was a guy who was a fairly wealthy guy, and he wanted to just meet with a bunch of guys, so he was playing poker, and he would go to this poker game where people played very seriously, and he didn't care. So what he did was he went and he gambled wildly. Wildly he gambled. He didn't care. He'd bet money and he'd win sometimes and lose other times. And then they came back to him, and even though he was losing more than he was winning, they told him he wasn't invited back. Now, why wouldn't they invite him back? They wouldn't invite him back because they didn't like the way he played, because he wasn't a serious poker player. They wanted people who played this game seriously, not somebody who could afford to lose. The idea was everybody had to have the same kind of risk. So he was ostracized, and he's not used to being ostracized, wasn't used to being not allowed to play the game. He had all the money, you know, of course I could play in the game. No, we won't let you in the game. He couldn't. It was one of the few times in his life he was ever told, you're not invited. There are people who are ostracized because of their religion. You're not allowed to go into that church or that synagogue or that place. And there are people that we ostracize. We're going to talk more about that today. Ostracize is such a fascinating word, you know, if you think about the word ostracize, from the Athenian democratic process. Now, this is fascinating. Ostracize. It was originally the prominent citizens of Greece in Athens could expel a citizen from Athens for 10 years for no reason. See, here's the way it worked. If there was a disrest, an unrest among the politicians, one of the ways they would solve the unrest is they would figure out, you know, if we just got rid of Tony, there were very few Tonys in Athens, but if we just got rid of Tony, we would have, I think things are going to get better. So let's just get rid of Tony. and they would get rid of Tony for 10 years. So they would ostracize Tony. They would tell him, you're not allowed to be here anymore. And the way they would do this is they would have a vote. They would have a piece of pottery. They would have these pot shards. Now, it was, the pot was called an ostraca. And there the word ostracize comes from it. Actually, the piece of pottery was an ostraca. And they would write on this piece of pottery, right? And they would write on it, get rid of Tony, or don't get rid of Tony. And they would throw it in this thing in an urn, and they would pull it out, just like, you know, on one of those survival things where they're going to vote on who's going to be allowed in and not allowed in. And they would go into the ostraca, and they would pull out the names, who's going to be allowed in and not allowed in. And when, if Tony's name came up, Tony was banished. And you're sent out. Tony, no more. Go out of here. Now, this is not such a horrible thing, but it's done. Animals have done this. You know, animals do it. In the animal kingdom, when one animal gets weird, let's say an animal bites other animals, you know, and just bites randomly, is just a little crazy, a little too much dopamine, you know, taking a little too much cocaine, eating too many of the coca leaves off on the side there, you know, and this animal comes along and goes biting animals randomly, or flirting with your friend's daughters or something, and they kind of get together and they say, you know what we will do? We won't talk to Zeke the zebra. You know, let's ignore him. And everybody ignores the animal. This they've done. You turn your back on the animal. They do this in the animal kingdom. It's like he doesn't exist. You die in their eyes. And I know in my family, in the Italian part of my family, I'm French and Italian, on the Italian part of my family, the Sicilian part of the family, they have this habit of having people die. You know, if they cast you out of the family, you don't exist. And so they turn your back on you as if you don't exist. They don't respond to your phone calls. They don't do things like that. So in the animal kingdom, they ostracize you. And until the animal gets its act together, it stops biting. At first, it tries to get back in, but they just ignore him. You know, and you can see it. Sometimes I've seen it in duck ponds. You know, you'll see it in duck ponds when there's a duck, a wild geese, you know, that's been wild, and everybody kind of ignores it. And then eventually it goes away. And then one or another thing happens to this ostracized duck. It either dies or it gets its act together. It figures it out. Biting is no good. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind in memory of Pluto the planet. I'm doing a program on ostracism. Ostracism isn't really a funny subject. Ostracism is probably a source of some of the greatest pain of our civilization. Ostracism of races, of individuals because of their color, you know, because of the way they look, smell, taste, you know, just funny things. Humans are ostracized. They're ostracized because of the way they behave. You know, if you get a human who behaves in a funny way, and let's say they're making too much noise, or they make funny noises, they get ostracized. Somebody starts yelling, walking down the street, everybody turns their back on him. Nope, just ignore him. It'll go away. Either he's going to get his act together, right? Well, in the animal world, either they get their act together or they die. In this world, they either get their act together or they get on medication, right? Or they die. Another option that we seem to have, humans, those who are ostracized in one culture can be accepted by a subculture or a lesser culture. So let's say you are in a family that's a fairly white-collar family, let's say Connecticut culture. And you're in a Connecticut culture and you do things that are not good for Connecticut. Well, you could, and they say, oh, we don't like you doing those things in Connecticut. We think it's not nice for our neighborhood. So then you leave Connecticut and you move to Manhattan and you say, here, I'm in Manhattan now. I could do as much of this as I want. I could stay up late at night. I could go out to bars. I could do whatever I want here in Manhattan, you know. And then they say to you, you know, we don't like you staying up that late in Manhattan because you upset the neighbors around here. So you've got to move out of Manhattan and you go down to Florida and you live in Miami Beach. And so you could move from culture to culture where you're ostracized and you could still maintain your behavior, but you could move down to different cultures. And then eventually you could move over to some little beach island like Ibiza, and you could live in an island where everybody is stoned and drunk all the time, and you could still be partying. So, you know, you're ostracized by cultures all before you, but eventually you could find somebody who was going to accept you. How about you? Who do you want to ostracize? I'll bet you say nobody. I'll bet you say, like everybody I know, you say there is nobody you would ostracize. You are a fair person. You're a person who has no judgment about anybody, that you would accept and welcome anybody into your bosom. That's the way you are, that there is no part of you that feels that you would take especially any race, culture, or group of people and put them at a distance. I'll bet that's what you would say. You would say if anybody wanted to give it half a shot, if anybody wanted to contact me, I would at least give them fair listening. If any human wants to make contact with me, I would give them fair listening space. I'll bet that I don't think that's true. I think all of you ostracize people all the time, and I don't think you're wrong. I think it's the way our culture is developing. I mean, this whole idea of privacy, this whole idea of having privacy, this whole idea of protecting your privacy is all about that. We're trying to ostracize people who are trying to take advantage of you, which is what ostracism has always been about. The belief that if you ostracize people, they won't take advantage of you. Ostracizing cultures, getting rid of the gypsies, you know, keeping them out of the culture so that they don't take advantage of you, ostracizing the Jews so that they couldn't do things to you. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. I wonder how many of you have felt like you have been the victims of ostracism. And here are the questions I have about your ostracizedness. Or should I call it your Plutoness? You know, have you been ostracized? And if so, what do you know about yourself? What deal did you make? What game were you not willing to play? 212-209-2900 is the number. 212-209-2900. What was the bargain in your mind? What did you say to yourself? Did you say, I got ostracized, and what I did was I said I would not sacrifice my willingness to do what? I didn't want to play the game of. And then I want you to tell me I wish I had or I'm glad I didn't. You got the idea? See, the idea is I want you to look at when you had been ostracized, by whom, and are you glad you kept your ground and you were ostracized, or do you wish you hadn't? 212, and I don't mean just rejected. I don't mean a boyfriend told you that he doesn't want to be with you anymore. I don't consider that ostracism. I mean kicked out. I mean told you are not allowed here anymore. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello there.
All right. Yeah, I'm listening to you. You're tending to separate things out of context. Ostracism, or like you brought the question of race. It wasn't that people did not like white people or people did not like black people. People were exploited, and that was in the flower and the outgrowth of that exploitation. So you're not going to really understand it when you're socially isolated from its material basis, or what's going to happen, you're going to come up with like very wrong answers and very subjective answers. So you must put it in historical context, right, of group dynamics and group survival, and then you have a better understanding. So this way you won't go on with a lot of platitudes.
Well, what about you, personally? Have you ever felt ostracized?
We all have.
No, but what about you personally? Not we all have. I haven't felt too ostracized.
Yeah, I mean, what difference does it make? It's a social phenomenon. It's not a personal phenomenon.
Okay, you haven't felt it. Is that what you're saying? You're saying you haven't felt it?
Of course we have, but you're not going to understand the personal unless you understand the social.
Okay, but
you're missing a point.
I know I'm missing the point, but I'm asking you a simple question. Yeah. Have you felt this experience? Have you felt ostracized?
Of course.
Could you tell me about it?
Oh, man, come on. I'm a black man in New York.
Yeah, I know.
What else I need to tell you?
You can tell me a lot more. Tell me when did this really push you out? When did you feel it most?
I'm telling you, you're not going to get the answer being subjective. Mm. You're not going to get it. You're going to get a whole lot of platitudes and subjective sentiment without a scientific understanding of that social and psychological phenomenon.
So that's
so
the way...
Yeah,
I hear. So what's your name, by the way?
Osei, O-S-E-I.
Yeah. So, Osei, one of the ways that you dealt with this is you said to yourself, you know, one of the only ways that I could get through this is by at least getting a scientific understanding of what's going on.
Oh, no, by linking up with other people who suffer the same phenomenon.
Absolutely.
It's called organizing. That's all it is. It's called organizing.
Organizing what?
People that suffer the same contradiction that you're facing.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I'm going in a tunnel. Before I get clicked off, have a good day, okay, before I go in the tunnel.
Thanks, Osei. Yeah, you gotta watch out when you go into those tunnels. You get tunnel vision. 212-209-2900. Let's get another caller on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm going to use a pseudonym.
Sure.
It's Cafueda.
Casueda, what
no,
a fat...
No, Cafueda. And it means don't mind them.
Okay.
And I am responding to the last brother's statement that it needs to be put into a social cultural context. And for me personally, I have used a number of strategies, including those he represented, to collaborate with others having the same issue and contradiction and organizing. I'm also using it to work through a dissertation so that I am clear that as an African woman and in a Western context, that to be totally rejected by my immediate family due to sexual abuse, you know, to walk through that experience is to survive that experience only happens when you can stare it in the face and look at it at all the levels, you know, of analysis. So, you know, I personally have experienced ostracism most recently. And, you know, I am clear that my connections extend beyond those you know, bonds of blood, so to speak.
You know, and from what you're saying, beyond the bloods of beyond the rejection of family,
mm-hmm.
because a sexual abuse by a family member
mm-hmm.
takes you outside of the family. I mean, it's beyond family.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
You know, and I've stopped apologizing for it.
Absolutely.
And so it has been very much about taking a stand and being clear that, you know, those who are my kin who will not face it and name it, you know, they are in an unfortunate position. And that, you know, I have transcended it, you know, is my blessing.
So the ostracism as a black woman... the ostracism as an abused, sexually abused child How do you separate those two?
Oh, they're one, and they are a piece of my history, and, you know, it's made me who I am.
But do you deal with them separately, differently?
Oh, absolutely not, because for me, it's all about, you know, what kind of human takes advantage just because they can, and that can be in any kind of situation.
So I don't
separate them.
So do you feel, in a way, it's a question, do you feel that you have to categorize the abusers in a form? My question is...
No. Like I said, I don't separate. So, you know, I don't need to categorize or detach.
Yeah.
It's a piece of all of us. So, no. I think all of us have that piece of us who's living that contradiction, that in some way, some people who you cared about are not thinking well of you because they don't have to or because they can't, and they
Must
don't care
tough.
What you have to say about it.
Must be a tough road to hoe the way you're doing it, you know?
No.
You don't live with a lot of fear.
No. I've been weightlifting. So from your perspective...
It sounds great.
No,
why did you want to give a pseudonym?
Oh, because it frees me. And the pseudonym I've selected is from my language and my culture. And Kafweda is don't mind them, which is a position of self-determination. And so that's why, you know, it's so important to me to put that out there, you know, to know myself outside that kind of oppression.
Thank you very much for calling in.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Very, very interesting to hear people who address this issue. 212-209-2900, we're talking about, in case you just tuned in, ostracism, the whole... sense of ostracism and being ostracized. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Mary. I had an experience of ostracism. I was new to a neighborhood, and I was invited to a party, and when I sat down at the table to meet my new neighbors, this group of women just got up and walked away.
Wow.
Now, they didn't even know me well enough not to like me or make any judgment on me, but I still always remember living in that neighborhood and feeling like, telling my kids I guess they think we're the Addams Family, and we're different, and, you know, I was the working mother, and I had all these small children, and they were stay-at-home moms. I could never really quite figure it out.
But didn't you ask somebody, why did everybody walk away when I sat down?
I wasn't really brave enough to do that.
So what happened to you? Let me ask you this. If you're not brave enough to do that, you know, you walk into a room and you sit down, and everybody gets up and goes...
Well, it was an outdoor. It was in a backyard situation.
In a backyard, you know, it's the kind of thing. If you were an average folk, you'd go over and you'd say, "Hey, what just happened back there? I sat down at the table and everybody got up and walked out." That's what I would do. It would say to me that you're walking into that situation with a significant damage of your own from other situations. Have you felt that sense of not belonging in other places?
Well, it was at a time in my life we had moved in, and I had a baby who had just died. My son had just died.
Oh, my gosh almighty.
So, I was kind of very weak.
Oh, I hear. At a time when you needed most in the entire world to have a group of women put their arms around you, they disappeared.
Right, and I had this wonderful babysitter because I was working, and she had a tattoo, and it was great. I always, you know, she looked different too. It was kind of a really upscale neighborhood, and we weren't pretentious. I don't know, we weren't yuppies. So I always, you know, she was the contact during the week, and I don't know what it was, and but I did have that experience.
Did she sit down with you?
Oh, she wasn't there because it was on the weekend. And
did
she
have a tattoo?
No, I didn't. My babysitter did, though, but she was great.
Yeah, so you had them, and you sat down. Well, you know, I really could understand it happening to somebody in a new neighborhood when a group is a kind of tension where they feel that they've got to knock somebody out, but maybe on the good side. You sat down, and the demon said, you know, we got to make room for all the angels to sit with this lady. And they just made room for the angels, you know.
Well, you know, in the end, I moved out of that neighborhood. I, you know, other things have happened. But it is that experience.
Oh,
and
what a
shock. I think the experiences I took from it, they couldn't even have known me well enough to dislike me or
That's
not
right.
like me.
So it couldn't have anything to do with you.
Right.
It just had to do with the sourness in their hearts.
Exactly. And so I think that if you are ostracized in what you were talking about before, you can move to another place that...
Yeah, and sometimes you have to realize it has nothing to do with you. Nothing to do with you at all. You know,
right.
It just has to do with the people who are just where they are at this given moment.
Exactly. You know,
thank
they
you.
Had more free time.
What's your name?
Mary.
Mary, thank you for calling in.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Sure. We're going to take a short break, my friends. When we come back, a little music. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, talking about ostracism. And when we come back, we'll continue with our phone calls and a little more on this issue. Thank you. that one, Bernard. That is Roy Eldridge and Oscar Peterson. Yeah, Blue Moon. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Talking about ostracism, you know, ostracism is a very funny thing. Let me talk to you about ostracism. So I would ask you this question. Who would you ostracize? And we talk about today's society. And, of course, you know, you would like to say to yourself, oh, no, 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 we don't ostracize anybody. But listen to this. I mean, just get this. Get this idea of what's going on here with privacy and the whole concept of privacy. Spam. S-P-A-M. Now, spam is a group of people trying to make a buck by sending you emails that will get you to buy something or do something. And if they can get it into you, and you and maybe one out of 1,000 of you do something, buy something, see something, check something, look at something, they, the ones who originated this spam, make a buck. So they're really, you know, cold callers, and they're trying. There's somebody somewhere, some part of the world, who makes a, for each one of you out there who answer a call, maybe makes a mill. A mill is a tenth of a penny for every response. Okay, so that's terrific. That's their job. Their job is if they tell you, please check into this website, and you do, and one out of 10 million of you buy something, it's terrific. They get a penny, a tenth of a penny. So they've got to find ways of getting to you. So they sit at home and they try to figure out ways of getting through these things that you've devised to keep them away from you. So you've developed what's called spam blockers. You have ostracized them. You have kept them at a distance. You said, oh, no, I don't want you. Some of you have unregistered phone numbers to block these people from coming near you. Yes, you have in effect done what many of the other cultures have done to other people who have tried to have people come after them. You know, there are people who are not allowed to have gates around their homes, so beggars won't come to them. Well, we've done that now. We've done that through our computers. No, you're going to say, oh, it's not the same thing. People who are spammers are bad people. No, they're not bad people. They're people making a buck. They're trying to use technology to get in there to whatever way they can. And so they're trying to do it, and so we're going to ostracize them. We're going to push them out. We're going to say, no, I will not talk to you. I will not answer your call. And then they call you up on the phone. They do cold calls. And you have your phone call is unlisted. And they find a way to get through your unlisted call. And you say to them, no, I will not buy your magazine. I'm blind. And you say, no, I will not do this. And you make up reasons. And you get angry at them for calling you. And you hope you get off all their lists. In effect, you're trying to push them all at a distance. So in effect, you engage in the very same thing that our society is building, a world of ostracism, of trying to keep people at a distance. Is it the same thing? No. Because we're depersonalizing it. Because we're making it by such massive numbers. And we're getting it so big now at this point that it's almost getting to the point where it's futile, you know, to try to block anything from coming to you. I don't know how many emails you people get, you know, but many people have said, you know, in most of the corporations, they've kind of given up trying to block emails any longer. So anybody who's used to working with computers, and anybody who's used to using a lot of telephone work, now it's happening on cell phones. Pretty soon people are going to have access to the cell phone numbers, and your cell phones are going to be ringing, and they're going to be ringing off the hook with people soliciting things, and you're going to try to block them. And the very act of blocking someone moving towards you is an act of ostracism. So somewhere in our heart, we have to figure out, what are we doing? What are we doing? How do we do it? And if we could, we have to make peace with the fact that we do do it. Now, here's what I'd like you to figure out for yourself. Think about the places in your life outside of your computer and your cell phones and your places of business where it's a nuisance. I'd like you to think of a place where you would ostracize if you could. So think about if you have children in your children's school. Is there somebody you'd like to ostracize from that school? Think about it. Is there a child you'd like to have banned from the school or a parent? If you could. Admit it to yourself. How about in your own family? Is there a member of your family you'd like to have kind of banished? Harder to get to, huh? Make it bigger than that. In your neighborhood. In your office, wherever you work. Is there somebody you wish would just get fired? It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing. When you feel that you can't deal with someone and you feel powerless to deal with them, that's what you wish for. Remember when you were a kid, sometimes you would turn to your mother and you'd say, drop dead. Or you'd think, drop dead. You know, wish she would die. That's what a child does. A child doesn't think the consequence of a parent dying. They think, I wish they would disappear. I wish they would get out of my sight because I can't deal with them. Ostracism is an act of powerlessness. I don't know how to deal with you anymore, so I want to kind of banish you. Goes right back to the Greeks. When the Greeks didn't have any way of dealing with anyone anymore, and they had no more way of dealing with them, you know, like they weren't those monkeys. Monkeys, the bonobos? Bobonos. Right? Bonobos. The bonobos had a way of dealing with all problems. But they don't have a way of dealing with all of the problems. And so what they would do is they would say, you know, let's just get rid of the person. Can't deal with the problem, let's get rid of the person. So it's a sign of powerlessness on our part. And if we acknowledge our own powerlessness in certain situations, it really helps us a great deal to recognize our powerlessness. It helps us, and it helps us be a little more kind with the people. 212-209-2900 is the telephone number here. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing there, Armand? This is Raymond.
Hello, Raymond.
Hello, yeah. I wish I would have knew that when I was a little boy.
Yeah, very tough when you're a little boy.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, like, let me tell you something. I'm talking about, like, growing up and, like, not being picked for the team or, you know, because I was, like, a little dude, you know. And then, like, had uncles that's older than me, had aunts that's older than me, no brothers. So it was, like, you know, and then I'm the oldest of my sisters. So, I guess I kind of, like, ostracized them, too. I guess it kind of, like, trickled down.
How did you do it?
I don't know. I guess from me being ostracized, and then I had power over my sisters. I guess I don't know. As a kid, not knowing, I don't know. And then you know, like what I noticed, like as an adult, it makes me want to like push harder.
Yeah, it does make you want to push harder. When you were young, they called you names and they gave you labels, right?
Yes, by all means.
What names and what labels did they give you?
Stinker, shorty,
yeah,
snotty nose. I'm on. Like my father, he had seven brothers and sisters, and my mother had seven brothers and sisters. And they was older than them, and, you know. And my father, and my mother was older than their siblings. So all of my aunts and my uncles was like my sisters and brothers, but they was all older than me. So it was kind of like, you know, I got a lot of love, but then I got a lot of ostracism.
So when they called you these names. and you went to your family and you said, this is what they called me. What did your family say?
Well, I think my family was the one who started it.
Yeah, that's the trouble. That's the trouble. That's the trouble.
Actually, because stinker.
Yeah, I know where that came from. It's okay.
No, I know, but I don't know if it was because I was stinking. I think because I was doing things, bad things. I remember, like, they made me write a bad word on the ground with chalk. And right after I wrote the last letter, Armand, I don't know what I was writing. Right after I wrote the last letter, they said, "Ooh, I'm going to go tell your mother, I'm going to tell your grandmother." And I was so scared, so frightened. I'm like, but y'all made me write. I didn't know I was writing. I didn't even know how to count to 100 at that time. Probably been about 4 years old.
Wow. That's scary, isn't it? It's how terrifying that must have been.
Made me kind of like a nervous person today.
Sure.
And that's why, like, I'm, like, real careful, like, with my tongue and, like, the things I do. And I ask the Most High to guide my actions and my words because I don't want to hurt nobody, discriminately or indiscriminately.
Well, you see, the beauty of it is you at least learned from that you don't want to pass it on.
Nah, man. I don't ever want to pass that on. That's crazy. Because it's unjust. I mean, and then, like, you know, then I'm just like, as a child, that's one thing. But as an adult, it's like, it's okay. Like, what happened to me is cool. Because, like, what did they know? But I know that I can't do that.
Yeah. Great, Raymond. Great. Great. Nice that you learned. Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
And a lot have to do with you. Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Thank you. Just don't understand, man. A lot have to do with you. I work out of my car. I mean, I don't know what happened to you last week or a couple of days ago, what have you, but you got to get on the air more, man.
Well, we're on here every day except when they have some kind of an emergency, you know, where they...
Yeah, I know, but I heard the emergency. It wasn't, I don't know. I listened to the program. It wasn't all that. I needed you.
Okay.
I just revere you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. 212-209-2900. Yeah, I know. I've been here for 18 years now. Be around with you as long as possible. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. I like that. I heard the emergency. I needed you. Hi there.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I on?
You're on.
Okay. I always enjoy your program. When you talk about ostracism, my sister, brother, and I were the first three black children in a Catholic school in upstate New York, and we were ostracized by, I mean, like all the children. They were middle and upper class kids, but there was this one little boy. His name was Richard Burns. I will never, ever forget him because he broke all protocol. We became so tight. We used to sit in the back of the schoolyard, play Captain Midnight. We would listen to all the programs of Superman, King of the Yukon. If something happened to my radio, he would call me on his phone, and I could listen over his phone. But one of the funny things was, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay. One of the funny things was that the Girl Scouts were very, very prominent in the school. And I was too young to join the Girl Scouts. So somehow I got into the Brownies. And it seemed like nobody liked me being in the Brownies.
Nobody in the Brownies liked you being in the Brownies?
Nobody. The school, they sort of like said, you know, like, boom, there's not too much we can do about it, so we more or less have to accept her. And because of the ostracism, I dropped out.
Hmm.
And I tell you, in retrospect, I think about it now, and I laugh like crazy because I was the only true Brownie.
In what way?
In what way? They had brown uniforms. They were called the Brownies. They were all white.
Oh, I see. And you're the only brownie, right? That's great.
And I have to tell you, I have gotten past so much crap because one of the things that I learned in the school was, and it just destroyed that concept of intellectual inferiority because I aced every single class I was in. And that has given me a beat up on life like nothing else ever has. I never have to worry about certain aspects of BS in life. And it's gotten me a long way.
Well, you know, you must have had some special support somewhere along the line.
My foster mother.
Yeah, it's coming from somewhere around you.
She was something else when it came to education.
You could tell.
She would sit there, and she's happy with that ruler. I don't believe in a hands-on. But it wasn't that, I mean, if you took a spelling test, you had to get 100% in order to pass that test. You couldn't miss one question. It was a discipline that has given me so much in my life. I mean, I'm not that strict with myself. I was never that strict with my son, you know, in retrospect. But there is something in me that lets so much stuff. I will say this. I will put it like this. My son is a black man. He's also a broker. And he knows the ins and outs of the race game. And one thing, sometimes you find people that are in those positions, they either become obsequious or they become confrontational. When he is faced with it, he just looks at them and says, hey, you want to be better than me? Be my guest.
It sounds like it really comes down the line. What's your name?
My name is Florence.
Florence, I want to thank you for calling in. Nice to hear that story as well. Thank you very much for calling in. You know, and Florence also reminds me about something about children who skip grades. You know, I think people should be more careful about skipping grades with children because very often that happens. You take a child and you put a child ahead or you put a child back or you put a child at a special school, you move children around, and they often get ostracized by the other students, and they feel out of place. And it's up to the child to be able to give the parent the feedback as to how they feel in that place. I knew of one child who was recently bribed by her parent about going into an advanced class. And the parent said to the child, you know, look, I want you to go and try this thing out. And I want you to try it out. And if you try it out, I'll get you the toy you always wanted. And the child said, okay, I'll try it. And the child came back 2 days later and said, listen, the hell with the toy. I don't want the toy, but I do not want to go into that class. And mom said, okay, it's a good deal. The child knew what was wiser for her, what was better for her. So it's very important to be able to have a communication between the parent and child that teaches that child what's good for the child. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. Time for another call. We've got time for one. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi.
Hi there.
Oh, hi. My name is Ed, and I'm calling to tell you about my girlfriend, whom I've known about 15 years. And she told me about her family, who, when she was a little girl, she was sexually abused by a family member, and she told me that when she shared this with her mother, that her mother slapped her and told her not to repeat that to anyone. As she got older, she opened her mouth and let other family members know, and as a result, they would ostracize her. When she became an adult, as she became an adult, she realized that her family members didn't like her being around. And when she was around, they would treat her differently. And this person that said she abused her, she found out, you know, years later that he was abusing his own daughter. And she went, and when she found out, she reported him, despite the fact that she knew her family were going to, once again, go against her. And she reported him and had him arrested. And to this day, she suffers because she wants, she likes feeling like she has a family. But her family, they're not like her. You know, she's a worker, and her family, they, you know, they're kind of like they don't work, they hang out, they're into drugs, and they ostracize her. And I think it's because of that, and also because they're jealous because she works and she has good jobs and she earns money. And I feel bad for her because she goes through depressions, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, being ostracized by her family. And that's it.
Yeah, I hear. I've heard a lot of stories like this and a lot of reports like this. You know, in many of the cases, a person has, you know, a person, when they first tell it, the reaction is usually so severe by a family member that, you know, it's to believe the story is to shake the entire structure of the family. So the first reaction is denial. And so what do you do when a person says something that to admit the truth of it means that everything you believed in wasn't true? That everything, if you believe that the father was abusing a child, that it's just like too much to believe. So you tell the child, don't tell anybody, this is too much of a truth to tell. So I understand it, and I've seen it often enough. And then, you know, the person who's being denied the truth can get so agitated by it that they get, you know, additionally angry. And it creates this kind of a chaos. And there are therapists who are out there who are doing nothing but trying to help people get through this kind of problem. And there are family therapists who help people who are working just to recover from this kind of situation. And I think it's really indicated in this situation here. Because she is going to be damaged from it. They don't know how to deal with it. It's very, very difficult.
And what you're saying also is true with me, in the sense that I was also sexually abused. And even though I was a child, I was probably between 5 and 7 years old when this was going on, I realized that if I told, that my whole family would break up. And
that's usually the
feeling
that's
in there. And I never told because of that.
So maybe time for you to talk to somebody about it.
Oh, I have.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. I'm glad you're here. And this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. We've got to be going. I will be back with you on Tuesday without fail. With more stuff from The Positive Mind. If you want a copy of today's program, you can go to thepositivemind.com. Be sure to visit WBAI.org.